You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up tomorrow morning after 6 on the Joy Cardine Show, Tell Joy Where to Go. This week, Joy's guests share some hidden gems to see around Wisconsin, and you can call in with your favorite travel destinations off the beaten path. That's tomorrow morning after 6 here on the Ideas Network.
Now, after a week of high-profile meetings with Democratic leaders, President Trump has crossed party lines to make deals on some big issues. Last week, he sided with House and Senate minority leaders, respectively Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, on a 3-month deal to raise the debt ceiling. Republican leaders objected to that 3-month extension.
Last night, the president met with Pelosi and Schumer again to work on the broad strokes of legislation that would give legal status to so-called Dreamers, who are undocumented immigrants brought to the U.S. as children. CNN reports that President Trump has invited more Democrats to the White House than Republicans in the past week.
These meetings with Democrats came up yesterday in the daily press briefing. Here's what White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders said, starting with why voters elected President Trump.
They were sick and tired of business as usual. They wanted somebody who would break up the status quo, that would bring people from both sides of the table together to have conversations. This president's done more for bipartisanship in the last 8 days than Obama did in 8 years.
Elaine K. Mark is a senior fellow in the Governance Studies program at Brookings Institution and the author of Why Presidents Fail and How They Can Succeed Again. She joins us to look at bipartisanship in the era of Trump. Elaine, welcome back to Central Time.
Well, thank you for having me back.
Well, let's take on that statement we just heard from Sarah Huckabee Sanders, saying that President Trump has done more to advance bipartisanship than President Obama did in 8 years. What do you think about that remark?
I think it would be true and admirable if, in fact, there was any thought or strategy behind the president's dealings. It is very clear from the news report that his first attempt at bipartisanship was done basically on the spur of the moment and surprised Pelosi and Schumer as much as it surprised his own colleagues, McConnell and Ryan. And that is the problem here. The problem is not bipartisanship, which everybody kind of likes and could get behind. The problem is that you never know what this president is going to do. So we don't know how long this little love affair with the Democrats will last. And given how polarized the two parties are, and given what a polarized campaign President Trump ran, it is entirely possible that this is just going to blow up in his face as his base and his party abandons him.
Well, the president has changed course. This was not his tactic in the first, 7 months of his presidency. And now he's working with Democrats. It's a shift for him. Do you think that this is in a sense, though, what President Trump pledged to do? He pledged to shake things up and to make deals. He's considered a consummate deal maker. And if that means reaching across the aisle, even if his own party is ticked off, that's what he's going to do. Is it fair to see it that way?
Well, I think he certainly promised to make deals. The problem is that he also promised a whole lot of things to his base that Democrats aren't going to make deals about. So believe me, when he said that he was going to get rid of DACA, the plan to let immigrants' children stay here who were brought here through no fault of their own, when he said that, his base took it to mean that he wasn't going to let this happen anymore. But in fact, what it looks like he's now telling people it means is, oh, I was going to repeal it and then we're going to do some legislation to make it permanent. So there's no problem with making deals except that he's so far out on so many issues that he's in a sort of lose-lose situation. He's either going to completely change his mind and come towards the Democrats on some very, very testy things like immigration, or he's going to further blow up the Republican Party. Since the Democrats are the minority, they can't deliver for him the majority. So he's got to worry about his own party.
Can you define blow up the Republican Party?
Well, you know, the Republican Party has had a lot of internal strife ever since 2015 when Trump, you know, came into the field. There is a part of the Republican Party that some people call it the alt-right or the extreme right that has very hardcore positions on a bunch of issues. And Trump really got their support during the primaries. He was able to beat a lot of better known and more qualified Republican candidates and came into the White House really on the wings of a faction of his political party. Now, those people are expecting that he's going to deliver for them. And if he doesn't, if he starts reversing course, as he appears to have done this morning, well, they're going to be really mad. Now, I think it's great that, you know, he's going to work with Democrats to get some legislation for these kids who were brought here when they were young and don't know any other home but the United States. I think it's great. But boy, oh, boy, I think there's a lot of people who voted for him who are going to have a different opinion. And they're in the House, at least, they're not going to vote for a deal.
In terms of getting his own party to fall into line, is this an effective tool? They're effectively sidelined while the president is eating, by what I hear in CNN, Chinese food and chocolate pie with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, and they're on the outside looking in. Could this bring them into line for him?
I don't think so. It depends on the substance of the deal reached, right? And, you know, you got to go back to this Donald Trump, the consummate deal maker. He was a deal maker in real estate. Now, I would never presume, as a political scientist and a professor, right, I wouldn't presume to negotiate a real estate deal because I don't know anything about it. What we saw in healthcare is that Donald Trump doesn't have enough depth in policy to actually get in and negotiate things. And I think that's going to be the same way here. So I don't know that. I think this consummate deal maker is a bit of nonsense, frankly, because you can't be a consummate deal maker if you have no substantive depth. So the question is, if he is, quote, dealing with Pelosi and Schumer, what happens? Does he cave, either wittingly or unwittingly, because he just doesn't know enough? Or is he actually able to get a good deal? He certainly flopped on health care. And a lot of that was just he didn't know enough. He didn't understand the intricacies of that market and that system.
On the other hand, I mean, he is moving legislation, moving things forward. We've got DACA. We've got the debt ceiling that he did a deal with Democrats. And maybe it's not about victories, but maybe it's ending gridlock.
Well, that would be very nice. And the debt ceiling deal, so to speak, was particularly important because it's been absurd that for the last several years, a small group in the House has basically held up our entire government and never succeeded at it, but keeps doing it again and again and again, and threatened that the U.S. would default on its debt. This could be a really important deal going forward, particularly if they can just get rid of this debt ceiling business once and for all. So I think it will be. But here's the rub. I mean, every time we think that Donald Trump is going in a certain direction, or we think he's acting like a normal president, he does it for a while and then he reverses himself. So, you know, the back and forth on Charlottesville, where he said some pretty outrageous things. Everybody said, boy, that's terrible. Then he gave a very presidential speech from a teleprompter. And then two nights later, he went to Phoenix and was, you know, unhinged again. So the problem is that the president has not shown himself to have a steady hand or a steady leadership style. And it's hurting him.
We're talking with Elaine Kmark now from the Brookings Institution about bipartisanship under President Trump.
You can join in now at 800-642-1234. What is your take on President Trump's meetings and dealings with Democratic leaders over the last week? Are you happy to see this happening? Do you think this could be a sign of more bipartisan cooperation and of gridlock in Washington? Or are you worried about it? Did you vote for President Trump? Is this exactly what you wanted not to see from him? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation and get to your calls in a little bit here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're picking up our discussion now about bipartisanship in the Trump era with Elaine Kmark from the Brookings Institution.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the deal-making between President Trump on one hand and then Democratic leaders of their parties in Congress on the other on the debt ceiling, hurricane relief, and a government budget? Apparently a deal partly in the works on DACA and deportation. Maybe the wall gets thrown in there. Is this what you wanted to see from the president? Is it what you didn't want to see from the president? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
And we'll take a caller now. We've got Jim joining us in Rice Lake. Jim, hi.
Hi, thanks. I mean, we all have our attitudes and perceptions of Donald Trump as president. I'm not going to convey mine. But the truth objectively of Donald Trump is that we have a president who never held any elected office in his life. And what we really have is amateur hour. We have a person who's trying to learn to do the job, you know, on the job, and he's the president of the United States. We saw a little bit of this with Governor Jesse Ventura of Minnesota, but that was a much less significant position. So I'm not going to say what I think of Donald Trump. I'd just be interested in your guest comments and my attitude about that point. Thank you.
All right, Jim, thanks for that. And sounds pretty familiar, Elaine. You were saying that the president you thought wasn't skilled in the art of politics. He didn't have the depth of knowledge.
No, he doesn't. And the caller, I mean, it's interesting the caller should mention Jesse Ventura, because I often mention Jesse Ventura in talking about the president. Periodically, we get these, wonderfully charismatic candidates who tap into some reservoir of anger, hope, et cetera, in the electorate, get elected. And then what happens is they tend to fall pretty flat on their faces because they don't have the political skills and knowledge to actually turn the expectations of their voters into reality. And so that, I think, is what a lot of people fear for Donald Trump, is he's just not going to be able to deliver what he promised people he would.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. And we're going to go next to Anna in Waukesha. Anna, hi.
Hi. So I had briefly mentioned that I thought it was very interesting, you know, that we brought up the fact that the alt-right really did put Donald Trump in office, and we're seeing this sashaying of Trump going between his Republican ideals and then Democratic ideals, and everyone thinks that it's different, but the fact is, this is what Donald Trump was like before he even ran. I mean, he would go from Democratic ideals to Republican ideals. There's interviews where he supports the war, where he's against the war, where he's for paid maternity leave, where he's against it, and you know, we're now seeing that with him as a president, and I truly do believe with your guest that, you know, we're kind of seeing him almost grasping at straws. It's like he's a dog that's going between people at the dinner table trying to get a treat and trying to appease everyone. And personally, I mean, I didn't vote for Trump. I was very much for Bernie Sanders, so it was obviously a very drastic change for me to see someone like the Donald in office. But it's harrowing to see it as not just a Democrat, but just as a person that, you know, our presidency is in the hands of a man who I don't think he even knows.
Anna, thanks for the call. Appreciate that. And Anna basically saying, if you're surprised, then you haven't been paying attention. She says this is what Donald Trump has been like. And also, you know, this is what Republicans have feared, that Donald Trump would get into office and might cut deals that betrayed Republican conservative ideals.
Oh, Anna's really hit the nail on the head here. He was all over the place before he ran for office. Then when he ran, and Steve Bannon had a great deal to do with this, it's recounted in the latest book about Steve Bannon, Steve Bannon gave him sort of a coherent platform, if you will. It was an alt-right ideology, and as he became more and more famous, as he got closer to his goal of the nomination and then the general, he really articulated that platform, which terrified a lot of people like Anna, who voted for Bernie Sanders, and others. And I think that a lot of people, sort of mainstream Republicans, ended up voting for Trump because, first of all, they didn't like Hillary Clinton. That's another story. But secondly, because they thought it was kind of an act. You know, they thought that somehow he'd get into office and he'd, on places where you expect a president to act like a president, he would. Well, interestingly enough, that we're now nine months into this, and it really hasn't happened yet. And I think that has a lot of people worried.
Anna, thanks so much for the call. And another quick one we've got here from Peter in Madison. Peter, hello.
Hi. I think it's okay if Chuck Schumer, in this particular case, we can work something out with Trump to help the DACA recipients out. I think that's okay. But in general, I don't think it's a good strategy for the Democrats to focus on bipartisanship and trying to cheapen their brand by working with Republicans. What they should be advocating for and what they should be putting forward as policy proposals, I don't think align with what the Republicans would be on board with at all.
Peter, I'm going to leave it there. We're a little short of time. And Elaine, what do you think about what Peter said, that Democrats, maybe they shouldn't be so willing to sit down at the table with President Trump? Maybe there's something that could damage them in the future.
Well, I don't think Democrats are going to make any big concessions to Donald Trump. I mean, I think that they are absolutely in opposition to most of what he ran on. But as the caller said, there are some areas, like the debt ceiling, where the Democrats absolutely wanted that. The Republicans were against it, and suddenly Trump switched positions. So I think that the Democrats can, you know, deal with the president to the extent that they stay clear in their own positions and true to their own principles. But if they start giving in or compromising with Donald Trump, I think they're going to have a lot of trouble.
Elaine,
and frankly, I don't think they'll do it in the end.
Elaine, thanks a lot for joining us. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me.
That was Elaine Kmark, Senior Fellow in the Governance Studies Program at the Brookings Institution and the author of the book, Why Presidents Fail and How They Can Succeed Again. She joined us there to talk about the prospect of bipartisanship under President Trump.
It's been nearly 30 years since special environmental protections were put in for a 92-mile stretch of the lower Wisconsin River from Prairie du Sac to roughly Prairie du Chien. By most accounts, the river bluffs and water in the main channel are in good shape. But scientists are increasingly concerned about the backwaters of the river because of excessive growth of algae and other vegetation. Chuck Kornbach reports.
Just off Highway 60, east of Spring Green, hydrogeologist Ken Wade is taking the cap off the top of a pipe. The vertical pipe is a monitoring well, one of three here that Wade checks to keep track of the quality of the groundwater. Wade and another hydrogeologist, Dave Marshall, then take a water sample and test it with a meter. Marshall gives the reading.
It's going to be roughly between 15 and 16 milligrams per liter nitrogen.
That's bad, says Marshall, as the nitrate level is likely contributing to a problem about 100 feet to the south in a lower Wisconsin River backwater called Jones Slough. Marshall moves to the edge of the slough and looks at the green and brown carpet of vegetation.
You see very little open water. Some days you see absolutely no open water. And that's because of the dense growths of filamentous algae and duckweed.
Marshall explains that here in the River Valley, a lot of nitrogen, including that found in manure, is put on nearby farm crops that are grown on mostly sandy soil. He contends too much nitrogen is applied, and a lot of it leaches into the groundwater, which flows into the sloughs. Marshall says the excessive plant growth is found in many of the 100 or so backwaters along the lower Wisconsin, including Crusand Slough near the village of Lone Rock. Marshall and Ken Wade head out on Crusand in a small boat. It's a bigger water body and farther from potential nitrogen sources, so the nitrate level isn't as bad. But Marshall says the contamination has been growing in recent years.
Historically, these shallow oxbow lakes were very clear and weedy, and that's just ideal fish and wildlife habitat. But now, you know, we're seeing a shift.
Marshall says not only is recreational fishing less pleasant in many of the sloughs, but rare fish species like the starhead top minnow are at risk. He also says during floods, the backwaters can carry contaminants into the main river channel. Ken Wade says he and his colleague, both retired from the DNR and now active with the Friends of the Lower Wisconsin Riverway, are setting the stage for potential action on the nitrogen issue.
We are defining the problems and giving enough detail, so even if we don't have an immediate solution, people will understand what the problem is.
DNR Water Resources Specialist Gene Unmuth also studies the Lower Wisconsin sloughs and calls them jewels or pearls in the landscape. She says agriculture is not the only source of contaminants.
There are impacts from runoff from cities and villages, as well as people that, you know, fertilize their lawns that live along some of these sloughs. So rather than point the finger at just agricultural producers, we need to work as a whole.
Still, Unmuth says there are things farmers can do to reduce the flow of polluted groundwater. But she says in many cases, such action is voluntary, and it's up to state policymakers to decide otherwise. The executive director of the Lower Wisconsin Riverway Board, Mark Kupp, says those policymakers may want to consider the economic benefits of a clean river.
Because we're within 4.5 hour drive of 20 million people, and it's beautiful here. And it's important that we protect these places, including the backwaters.
The Friends group says the sloughs is one of the issues that will be discussed at a 2-day State of the Riverway Symposium being held in Spring Green beginning Saturday. Chuck Kornbach, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, there are three different health care efforts in the U.S. Senate, single-payer, an Affordable Care Act fix, or a revival of the repeal and replace effort. Our guest helps us sort out the policy debate.
We'll meet a championship arm wrestler from the Wausau area and find out how she competed in an international competition in Hungary this week.
And on Food Friday, great advice for making sweet potatoes.
It's all coming up tomorrow, plus a look at the day's news on Central Time.